Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Joel Alkonen, co-host of the Benzinga Pre-Market Prep Show, also editor of the Pre-Market Prep website, which we will link to below. Now Joel, another day for these markets, another, let's say, broadly sideways move. It's been about 2 weeks now where markets have more or less moved sideways, still with arguably a little upward bias, but overall, that general momentum, that upward momentum that started in the first or second half of October, well, it seems to have dissipated a little bit. But again, we're not seeing many huge volatile days. We're not seeing multiple percentage moves up or down, which is a little different than earlier this year, because this year it was volatile, more to the downside. Joel, what's your takeaway from now? We're almost in December and these markets seem to have all of a sudden slowed down and become quite boring.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I just think the market's a little bit tired. You know, it's been a volatile year. We had a really nice move off that October low, right? Over a 500-point move in the S&Ps. And it just feels like, okay, you know, it's been a rough year. You know, we had the rallies over the last couple of weeks, and you just kind of felt the sellers out there. Like, okay, I'm going to trim some losses. I'm in tax loss selling. You know, I'm not looking for a home run on this trade. And, you know, so you had the offers out there, and you actually matched the high of the move during the Globex session on Wednesday. Friday was a nothing muffin day. And then, you know, you get China concerns over the weekend, and that got things started on a negative note. When the markets get like this, like I look like, you know, where's the major resistance? Well, I can see the major resistance in the S&P, and that's 40-50. And it hit that level on the PPI number 2 weeks ago, and then it hit it, as I said, at the end of last week. And then I look, and I'm like, well, where's your good support? You know, like where would the buy the dippers come in? And frankly, and was looking at the markets yesterday, I don't, you know, is there any reason to step out at, you know, 39.80 or 39.70 or 39.60? So, you know, we've taken out the low from the day. We haven't got to the low from last week. So that's what I'm going to use as a gauge to see if, you know, if we're going to have a weak December, if we're going to have a Santa Claus rally or not. But, you know, you gotta, you know, if you're after a 500 plus point rally in the S&Ps, you know, a dip of 50, 60 handles is not exactly buying the dip. So the sellers are out there and you know where they're at. It's, you know, it's just the lack of buying and the lack of buying participation, that kind of, you know, makes it harder to get bullish for a year end run.
Yeah, Joel, and after a nice run in November, well, really from October into November, it's normal to see some backing and filling here and some base building and for people to try to figure out where are the levels where the buy to dippers will come in. But it seems like for the last couple of days, the end of last week and the beginning of this week, every day my newsfeed gets hit with about 6 to 7 articles about China. And it's either about the concerns about China, the slowdowns in China. But then yesterday it was an about face where there was rumors that China could reopen. There's cheer that they're going to be maybe ending their zero tolerance policy a little earlier than people thought because of all these protests. And the Asian stock markets really started ripping higher on Wednesday. And some of that's carried over. What do you make of this U-turn in the Chinese markets?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like the opposite thinking. And that's sometimes what you have to do in the markets is, you know, it's like, okay, you got to, the news is the news, right? You're not going to make the news, but you can interpret the price action off it. I mean, these stocks have been decimated, right? Since 2021, when they, you know, started going after Alibaba. I mean, 22 has been, you know, 15, 20% down anyways. But if you look at, you know, where some of these stocks came from, Baba over 300, getting down to 60 bucks, Pinduoduo. I mean, these stocks have just had just, you know, huge declines. Now, you did get some good earnings out of Pinduoduo yesterday or over the weekend. That's having a nice move. That's having nice follow through. Baba's just trying to, you know, get off the mat. So I can't, it's not really sell the news. It's like buy the news. And who knows where they're at with their COVID policy. You know, this has a big effect, obviously, on oil consumption. But right now, I'm just not really trying to find a reason why the markets are up. I'm just trying not to fight it and, you know, see where it takes us. But, you know, overall, having the China market, Chinese market, and having the foreign markets doing better, it is ultimately better for us as well.
Joel, what do you think's been driving commodities recently, more so the precious metals? Because the precious metals actually have generally bucked the trend, but again, they've kind of moved sideways for the last couple weeks. Copper made a run up towards $4 and then pretty quickly pulled back. Any of those recent runs in commodities to the upside more sustainable in your eyes?
You know, they're all so different with their fundamentals, right? But you know, the dollar's definitely backed off, right? So that's helped the price of commodities. So I would say, you know, that's been a good factor. You know, these things, all the supply chain worries and all the concerns that we had, a lot of them just got to very, you know, historically overvalued or high levels, and they came crashing back down again. And it's just now just a return back to the, you know, to the equilibrium. I mean, crude is its own story with OPEC. You know, what they say and what they do is one thing. Of course, demand in China is directly tied to that as well. Gold has been a beneficiary. You know, there's been a weakness in Bitcoin. And, you know, the dollar softened up a little bit. So interesting rallies in both gold and silver. They look like they want to kind of roll over at the end of last week, and then they just catch another bid. So a combination of different factors. We haven't totally rolled over and went into a recession. And I think you're just getting some equilibrium prices and some of these commodities. And, you know, just you had the excess highs where they were overvalued, and you've had the, you know, the retreats and just getting back to, you know, equilibrium price.
Yeah, Joel, there's a tug of war between inflation concerns kind of tapering off some, but also those recession concerns and slowing growth on the other side. I think the dollar pulling back, as you mentioned, probably has been a tailwind for the commodity space. Whether that will last, we will see. But there's another tug of war going on out there, Joel, and it's between Elon Musk and Apple. And that's been an interesting newsworthy event this week. What do you make of the struggle between Musk and Tesla and Apple and with Twitter and them possibly not recognizing Twitter? What do you think of all that?
Oh, man, it gives me a headache to tell you the truth. You know what? Apple's a company that people love to hate. You know, definitely troubles going on in China, right? Their Foxconn unit there, unrest going on, not only in the company, but also, you know, with the overall, you know, citizenship. And Musk, I mean, he's just, you know, he's using the Twitter platform. I mean, he bought it. He knows he overpaid for it. He's trying to get some kind of use out of it. And he's attacking Apple, you know, saying, oh, they don't care about free speech. So he is definitely exerting some influence, and that spilled over into the big tech, Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon, you know, all trading in the red between, 0.4% and 1.8%. But, you know, it's just Apple's been in a trading range. 135 to 155. There was really no, you know, there was one other daily low just under 140. So what, you know, if you're an Apple shareholder, you know, you hope it just gets back down to that bottom of the trading range, sitting 135 a few times, and you get a bounce and gets back towards 155. Well, you know, that's resistance. I mean, the iPhone, I mean, you almost, it's like getting to the point where, you know, what's their new trick? You know, what's going to be the next catalyst? Especially if you have a recession, you know, are people going to be spending that kind of money for iPhones? But yeah, I mean, that, you know, it's the biggest loser of the top components today. And that's one, it's just really no great support in here. as we talked about, you know, higher or, you know, 139.40 and then all the support at 135. So, yeah, Musk is, you know, a little bit influence on that and Apple, and the China situation certainly isn't helping things.
Yeah, no, it is not. Your comments on Apple, what's going to be the next thing for the iPhone? Seems like every iPhone that's released, longer battery life, better camera. That's what we keep on hearing, right, Joel? Joel, one other quick question on Tesla then, because Tesla's down over 50% pretty much this year. A lot of naysayers are saying Musk is distracted. One other kind of boots on the ground assessment that I had is that I was hanging out with a friend a couple days ago, and he was looking at buying a Tesla, went into, it would actually be his second Tesla. He went into the Tesla store and was expecting a wait, maybe 4 months, maybe 6 months, maybe a year. They said they could get it to him within the week. That actually shied him away from buying the Tesla. What's your thought on Tesla here? Is this stock going to continue to move lower?
Well, it has escaped the perils of overvalued stocks, right? And this was the year, you know, of contraction, and also in 21, you know, where these stocks, they didn't make any money. I know Tesla makes money. So now it's just coming back to roost. It really is. I mean, the fundamentals, you know, of companies that are trading at higher valuations, that it just doesn't fit the bill. This is not where, you know, it's not the sector that, you know, growth is out. And until you get some kind of change in, you know, the interest rate environment, I just think people are like, you know, they just don't want to pay. They don't want, I mean, it probably still even trades at a high PE. They also have, you know, some linkage to China as well. But the stock had a hell of a run. It defied logic. It had a couple of the different splits. And now it's just people are looking at it and they're saying, wow, you know, this, how much more is that company going to grow over the next couple of years? Who's going to grow into that PE? And right now the street is saying no. So Pat, the least resistance is still lower. I know people are talking about the Cybertruck, but it just, you know, since the market's really turned its head towards value stocks, this just hasn't had the appeal, you know, on these buy every, you know, these big rallies. People are want stocks that make money. Pay dividends and, you know, have some pricing power. If everyone's worried about a recession, well, are people going to be spending the top dollars on cars and especially Teslas? I mean, that remains to be seen.
Well, Joel, that brings up another good point. We've made this point before that there's only a handful of stocks that have the majority of the focus in these indexes and the weighting in these indexes, and everybody's been piled into them for the last, let's say, dozen years. But leadership does change over time. Is there anything you see on the horizon that's some new leadership stepping up to the mic?
No, I mean, we talked about this last week and, you know, just, you know, the value trade. I mean, the growth trade was in for years and years and years in a falling interest rate environment. Now you have a rising interest rate environment. So, you know, for the growth companies, those, you know, those future earnings, you know, in a rising interest rate environment, there's just, you know, there's just not as much protection. You know, also the TINA trade. The TINA trade is officially dead, right? There is no alternative in the market. There is alternatives in the market. You don't have to get your face kicked in, you know, and lose, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5% in a week. There are interest-bearing investments in Canada and the U.S. where you'd be able to get 4.5-5%. You know, and if you step up to the corporates, you can do even a little bit better. You know, so, you know, the value of money now is important. Rising interest rate environment, you know, makes other, you know, there are other investments out there. And I think we just, you know, I think the Fed might have been on a different course of interest rates, but the pandemic hit, and that forced them to redo their playbook. So just like everything else, you know, got to get back to an equilibrium. I don't see rates going back down to those levels, and You know, what the heck's wrong with, you know, people on fixed income getting 3.5-4%? So there is an alternative in these markets now.
Yeah, such a different world that we are living in for these markets. And again, we don't know what the leadership is going to be as we come out of this, I guess, a different environment. And you're not alone in thinking that interest rates are going to stay generally higher, which should change at least some playbooks, if not all investors' playbooks. Joel, thank you as always for your time, buddy. It's great hearing what you have to say on these markets and some of the individual stocks that you are watching. We'll chat again next week, so have a great rest of your week.
Okay, thank you, guys.